Hi, this is Dr. Cassandra Quave, and you're listening to the Foodie Pharmacology Podcast. This is not your typical food podcast. As a professor and medical ethnobotanist that studies wild medicinal and food plants for a living, I have many cool things to share with you. In Foodie Pharmacology, we'll explore the ways that humans identify, collect, create, and transform foods, how they shape those into dietary behaviors, and how this influences human health. We'll examine the pharmacological or medicinal properties of foods as we discuss different species that have been integrated in various cuisines across the globe. This will help us to better understand the food-medicine continuum as a determinant of health and well-being. Foodie Pharmacology is a food podcast built for the food curious, the flavor connoisseurs, chefs, science geeks, foodies, home cooks, health nuts, and adventurous taste experimenters out there in the world. In our second episode, we're going to take a closer look at one of the world's most popular ingredients in a psychoactive beverage and explore its origins, how it's processed, which compounds yield its distinct flavor, and what impact it has on our health. There are few botanical ingredients that have held the cultural impact of this bright red fruit. Over time, we have learned to ferment, roast, grind, brew, extract, and consume it in its dark, potent form, or dress it up with a mixture of flavorful spices, sweeteners, and creams. Italians like to sip at it in tiny glasses throughout the day, standing in bars as they chat with friends. In America, it's gulped down in large grande cup forms. You can find small shops and diners hawking their special brew featuring this plant just about everywhere. Americans drink a whopping 400 million cups of this beverage every single day. Trade of this ingredient is worth $15.4 billion worldwide, and it supports the livelihoods of more than 100 million people globally. In many countries, it is a sign of courtesy to offer it to guests at home, over a meal, in business meetings, and even at weddings. You know which plant I'm talking about. I'm talking about coffee. Imagine a lifetime without ever feeling the stimulating sensation that one achieves following drinking a hot cup of coffee or tea, or nibbling on a bar of dark chocolate. Well, if you lived in Europe more than 400 years ago, that would have been your experience. They didn't have access to any of those species until recently. This is the part of the show when you need to pull out a map. Many people are confused about the origins of coffee and frequently attribute it to South America, where much coffee is grown today. For the coffee aficionados out in the audience, you likely know that it actually originated across the Atlantic in what is known today as Ethiopia, entering the human diet roughly 1,100 years ago. The first records of coffee drinking come from Arabia by the 10th century, where its Arabic name of Kawa originates. This was a truncation of its full name, Kawat al-Bun, for wine of the bean. By the 15th century, cultivation of coffee bushes was booming at the tip of the Arabian Peninsula in the region that we know today as Yemen, and it had also spread with its popularity to northern Africa, India, Anatolia, and the Balkans. Venetian merchants eventually introduced coffee beans to Europe in the early 1600s, and while Pope Clement VIII was initially leery of the stimulating beverage, in 1600 he announced that it was permissible to be consumed by Catholics. By the mid-17th century, coffee houses were popping up across the European continent, and there were more than 3,000 coffee houses in that period in England alone. How do I like my coffee? It really depends on the time of day for me. In the morning, there's nothing better than a lovely latte. I love having a cup of plain black drip coffee while I'm teaching my midday class. And when traveling, I'm a sucker for a sugar-sweetened espresso on the run or a leisurely moment sipping at a cappuccino in a cafe. The coffee plant is in the family Rubiaceae. Coffee beans are actually the seeds of the coffee berry, or the fruit of the plant. Despite its history and trade, its origins are not Arabia, but rather Africa. Do you still have that map out? You're going to need it. The genus Coffea arose in humid forests of Lower Guinea in West Africa. From there, it spread east, establishing populations that diversified across Central and Eastern Africa. As the forests retreated with periods of drought, the populations became separated. A major drought that occurred 18,000 years ago established the Dahomey Gap, which isolated the eastern and western Kaffaya populations. Eventually, millennia later, Kaffaya arabica would arise in the unique ecosystem of the high-altitude forests of Ethiopia and Sudan. Eventually, it would make its way from Ethiopia across the narrow gap of water that separates Africa and Arabia, crossing the straits between the Red Sea and the Gulf of Aden to the region once ruled by the Queen of Sheba. From Yemen, coffee was sent east to the Indonesian island of Java in 1690 and back west to La Réunion, just off the coast of Madagascar, in 1715. In 1706, a single coffee plant was taken from Java to Amsterdam in the Netherlands, becoming the parent of the main Arabica variety known as Typica. The two plants that survived that transplantation in La Réunion would become the parents of the Bourbon variety of coffee. The result of this history is that despite the amazing level of genetic diversity of Kaffaya plants in their homeland of Africa, the coffee plants grown today have very little genetic diversity. Indeed, the coffee now grown in more than 60 tropical and subtropical countries can trace their origins back to these very few individual plants. The ability to self-pollinate made this path from a single plant to millions of genetically similar plants in cultivation possible. Today, Brazil is the global leader in growing coffee. The majority of what we now call coffee comes from just two species, Kaffaya arabica and Kaffaya conifera. Its higher caffeine content has made Kaffaya conifera the preferred source for instant coffee, but its flavor is considered inferior to that of Kaffaya arabica, which is the species used for all fine coffees. According to scientists at Kew Gardens in London, England, while there are a total of 124 coffee species growing wild in tropical Africa, Madagascar, Asia, and Australasia, a recent risk assessment of their vulnerability revealed that more than 60% of these species are threatened with extinction. There are several that have not been seen in the wild and cannot be found in recent herbarium or plant museum collections created by field botanists. So while it took more than 18,000 years to generate the amazing diversity of coffee and flavor that we enjoy today, with the combined toll of habitat destruction and economic focus on an extremely limited variety of coffee, we are quickly losing the incredible diversity of this special genus. But don't despair. There are crop scientists, conservation ecologists, and botanists working on this issue. You can also make a difference through supporting fair and sustainable trade of coffee. Small farms around the world are the guardians of flavor, and you can support them with your purchasing choices. A few years ago, I had the opportunity to travel to the beautiful island of Kauai in Hawaii. Known as the Garden Island, it's easy to see how it got its namesake. The vegetation there is lush and green, with tropical fruits and flowers aplenty. When I first thought of crops of Hawaii, the immediate plant that came to mind was the pineapple. And while pineapple is an important crop for Hawaii, it turns out that coffee is as well. I visited the Kauai coffee plantation and saw rows of plants neatly lined up, their dark green leaves glistening in the sunlight, decorated with bright, plump red, ruby berries along their stems. Ever the experimental botanist, I plucked off one berry and popped it in my mouth, using my teeth to slightly crush the flesh to release the inner flavor. A wave of nasty bitterness rolled over the surface of my tongue and I spit it out. Yes, I learned, the processing of the bean is key to the flavor. Coffee beans are harvested at peak ripeness by either selectively picking them off of the stem, which was done historically by hand, or stripping them off by machine, which can also include a mixture of immature berries. Following the picking, the berries can be processed by one of two different paths. In wet processing, the flesh of the berries is removed by passing them through a pulping machine, and then they are separated by size. The seeds are then fermented in a large water-filled tank to remove the slimy coating of mucilage covering the seed. Next, the seeds are washed with water and dried. The coffee beans produced through this method are still inside the endocarp, or the parchment, envelope, and are typically processed further using a hulling machine to remove the dried husk from the seed. They may also be polished with another machine that removes any remaining parchment. In the dry preparation method, preferred in areas where access to water for the washing step is limited, the freshly picked berries, known in the industry as coffee cherries, are spread out on surfaces to dry in the sun. To prevent spoilage, they are raked and moved around every day. To make decaffeinated coffee, the unroasted green coffee beans are steamed and rinsed with organic solvents like methylene dichloride or ethyl acetate. These are commonly used liquids found in a chemistry lab, and if consumed themselves, are quite toxic. The toxic parts and the caffeine, though, are removed. In another method, supercritical carbon dioxide is used to remove the caffeine. First, the beans are steamed and put into a high-pressure container where water and liquid carbon dioxide is circulated through. There are a number of other methods such as the Swiss water process, the triglyceride process, and the indirect method that are also used. My first hunch as someone that knows a lot about plant extracts is that with any of these processes, you will also lose compounds other than just the caffeine, and this could impact the flavor or perhaps even the pharmacological properties and health benefits of the final product. Let's get back to those green coffee seeds. Regardless of how they were processed, now they are ready for roasting. But first, they are often shipped across the globe to the roasting site. Roasting is the process that transforms the coffee into those flavorful brown beans that we adore. Most roasting machines maintain a temperature of about 550 degrees Fahrenheit, and the browning of the beans begins at around 400 degrees when the fragrant plant oil, caffeol, begins to emerge from the beans. The beans are constantly rotated in the machine during this process. From this point, the roasted beans are then further transformed, and the final product is influenced by how finely they are ground and how they are extracted, under pressure as for espresso, by boiling in water, or by drip filtration. Who knew so much work went into making a simple cup of coffee? I didn't. Before we move on to our deep dive into the pharmacology of coffee, I wanted to share one more personal story with you. Part of my job as an ethnobotanist, or a scientist that studies the relationships between people and plants, is that I get to travel a lot, and often to some very interesting places. One day, I found myself staring at a small mound of poop made by a small cat-like creature at a coffee plantation in a remote part of Sumatra in Indonesia. Let me preface this story with the revelation that I've always been a dog person, never a huge fan of cats. So I'm looking at this pile of cat poop and thinking to myself, there is no way I'm eating that. It's something most normal people would think, right? But this wasn't just any cat. It was an Asian palm civet, and it had been fed a diet of coffee berries to make Kopi Luwak, one of the world's most expensive coffees, with its beans costing $160 a pound, or roughly $30 a cup at base price. The civet is frugivorous, meaning that it thrives on a diet of fruit, and as the coffee berries pass through its intestine, they begin to ferment. The civet is also selective in its food, meaning that it will only eat the most ripe and most delicious of the coffee berries. And thus, as a result, here we have a highly selected and pre-digested coffee seed produced by the time they exit the civet. Farmers collect the poop, rinse off the feces with water, and remove any remaining endocarp coating the seed. They then dry and roast them just as they do with any other type of coffee. While traditionally, this process was done with wild or cage-free civets that roamed a large area in the forest, the high financial return has pushed some farmers towards caging and force-feeding the animals, presenting some major ethical animal rights concerns. While traditionally, this process was done with wild or cage-free civets that roamed a large area in the forest, the high financial return has pushed some farmers towards caging and force-feeding the animals, presenting some major ethical animal rights concerns. I was visiting an ethical farm, though, with free-ranging civets, and I'll admit, even as a dog person, these little cats were cute. Public opinion on the taste of Kopi Luwak varies from delight to disgust. To be honest, I don't recall being wowed either way with the flavor of the brew itself. But then again, I wouldn't describe myself as a coffee connoisseur. It is an interesting outcome, though, of what happens when plants from one part of the world are moved to another, where they encounter fauna that may have a unique interest in them, which humans observe and then take advantage of, yielding poop-sourced coffee, of all things. Caffeine is a major bioactive compound found in coffee. It is a stimulant alkaloid belonging to the methylxanthine alkaloid subclass of compounds. And caffeine is not just found in coffee, but also in a number of other familiar food plants, such as cacao pods used in making chocolate, tea leaves for both green and black tea, kola nuts, and yerba mate leaves. Plants make this compound to defend themselves from insect attack. It shouldn't surprise you that caffeine is the most routinely ingested stimulant substance across the world. The flavor of coffee is due to a complex mixture of almost 1,000 distinct plant chemicals, and their relative composition is influenced heavily by the conditions under which the plants are grown. These compounds, especially the chlorogenic acids and flavonoids, are also responsible for many of the antioxidant benefits of coffee. Factors like the soil composition, the level of rainfall, pest exposure, and where they are grown all influence chemistry and thus the taste. Remember, plants up or down regulate the production of secondary metabolites or compounds used as a form of defense or to attract pollinators and seed dispersers in the plant, depending on all of these environmental factors. Caffeine levels differ in the final coffee bean product based on the species of coffee used, the environmental conditions in which it was grown, post-harvest handling, and the degree of roasting used as it is processed, whether it's light, medium, or dark. The form that it is sold in, be it whole bean, pre-ground, or instant, and then how you brew it, boiled, filtered, or espresso, also impact the final chemistry in your cup. This means that any cup of coffee that you drink never has the exact same chemical composition. There are just way too many variables at play in preparation from seedling to the final beverage product. So what about decaffeinated coffee? Is it actually caffeine-free? The simple answer is no, but it does contain much less caffeine, from 3 to 12 milligrams, in comparison to a cup of regular drip or percolated coffee that has at least 10 times more caffeine, ranging from 95 to 330 milligrams in a cup. A standard espresso cup of coffee has between 50 to 150 milligrams of caffeine. Caffeine itself runs the full spectrum of medicine to poison. In moderation, its pharmacological activity as a stimulant can be beneficial and help improve mental and physical performance. But in excess, it's a poison and can cause intoxication with a specific toxidrome known as caffeinism. Physical symptoms may include fever, dilation of the pupils, tachycardia, bradycardia, or nausea and vomiting. Some of the neurological symptoms can include mental agitation, delusional thoughts, hallucinations, and seizures. The lesson here is simple. Stay away from caffeine powder products. And whatever your preferred source of caffeine, whether it comes in a cup of coffee or an energy beverage, consumption of the product in moderation is key. Beyond the chemical caffeine, the consumption of coffee, which has a complex phytochemical milieu, has been attributed with other health benefits, including decreased risk for diseases associated with inflammation and oxidative stress, such as type 2 diabetes, Parkinson's, and Alzheimer's disease, and even certain types of cancers. On the other hand, consumption of coffee has also been associated with certain risks, including bone loss, lower bone density, and increased blood pressure. As with spice plants, the best way to keep the aroma and flavor from the chemistry of coffee fresh is to grind immediately prior to use and to store your beans in sealed containers, either at room temperature or frozen. The way you take your coffee, be it espresso, black, latte, sweetened, full calf or decaf, is up to your personal preference. But now you know that the way it is prepared impacts the overall kick of caffeine that you'll get. The next time that you enjoy a cup, take a moment to deeply inhale the fragrant aroma of its complex chemical medley and reflect on the path that this genus has taken from its origins in the humid tropical forests of Africa to a global network of growers, roasters, and consumers. Next time on Foodie Pharmacology, we'll investigate a crop that feeds millions of people in the tropics as a staple food. Its starchy tuber carries a dangerous secret, though. The fact that certain varieties are poisonous. This plant has many names. You may know it as cassava, manioc, or yucca. Tune in next time to learn more about how, over time, humans have developed traditional technologies to reap the benefits of cassava as a food source. I'm Dr. Cassandra Quave, and you've been listening to the Foodie Pharmacology Podcast, recorded at the Emory University Center for Digital Scholarship. Get updates on our latest episodes by following or liking the Foodie Pharmacology Facebook page. If you've got a great idea for a future show, reach out to me. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Quave Ethnobot, spelled Q-U-A-V-E-E-T-H-N-O-B-O-T.